Okay, everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Haters. My name is DJ Slufus.
I'm Schooley.
And today we are going to sit down and talk a little bit with the infamous Mr. Sam Henderson. Sam, how you doing today?
I'm okay.
Okay. First of all, again, thanks for taking the call. And I don't know if you're familiar with, I guess you're not, but Schooley, my buddy there, he is not a big comics fan at all, so he doesn't really know much at all about your background.
That's good.
That's true. I'm not much of a comic fan, but
yeah.
But
I try to think of categorizing between comics I like and comics I don't like.
Okay, so a true comic book hater as well, perhaps.
I like the form. I just don't follow it. I don't go to the store every Wednesday like a lot of people do.
Well, I think basically what you're saying, Sam, is you keep an open mind about it, whereas Schooley basically shuts his mind closed and hates everything.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I've been reading your stuff for many years now, I'm a big fan. But speaking to somebody who really isn't too sure of exactly what you do, how would you describe your material, or what is it that you're out to prove here?
Do dumb jokes. I do try to appeal more to the general public than to comic book fans.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't accuse you of really pandering to the comic book marketplace. I mean, some of your stuff is pretty out there. Schooley, have you looked at any of Sam's works?
Actually, I did. I saw a few of the strips that were online. I guess they were from Magic Whistle. They were some of the characters. We had interviewed, we spoke with, who was the guy that did Angry Youth Comics?
Johnny Ryan?
Yeah.
Kind of, I mean, obviously the content's different, but something about it reminded me of that. Are you a fan of Johnny Ryan?
I'm friends with him too. I've been told that my stuff, his stuff's a more polished version of my stuff.
I would go the other way around. I would have seen, but I've only seen four or five samples.
Yeah.
Right? Now I do have a question. You and this is kind of interesting because again, me not really sort of just bumbling along in the comic book world next to Slufus here. You worked and wrote a few SpongeBob episodes. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I looked up online, it looks like you've written one of the ones that I've seen.
Oh yeah,
yeah. The one where Mr. Krabs starts a theme park kitty thing.
I didn't work on that particular episode, but they're usually two per episode.
I checked that. I forget what I was looking at, but okay. Mm-hmm. How did you get started with SpongeBob? How did that?
I do a monthly strip for Nickelodeon magazine, and the creative director was a fan of my stuff.
I was going to ask you that. How does it? I mean, because especially I just sat down a little bit this morning and I was just flipping through like the Magic Whistles, there's just such a genre. I think I saw SpongeBob like once or twice maybe. I mean, it was kind of cool. I just never really never really took an interest in it, but I imagine it's pretty. It's a children's cartoon. I know you kind of also shoot for a more adult audience, but some of your stuff is just so vulgar. And I guess just looking through it all in one lump, it just kind of hit me. Because I would get an issue and laugh and kind of put it away, but then just sitting down and looking through all of it, some of it's just so, pretty raunchy. Like, how do you? I don't know what question I'm getting at here.
I don't think about how far I'm going to go. I just don't care.
No, I guess it wasn't really a self-censorship. I guess what are some of the differences you experienced? Because, between, obviously having absolutely no restrictions versus writing something for children. Is one more difficult, or do you feel confined in any way?
Not really, when I do things for children, I'm aware that there are restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep that in mind.
Yeah. Now, and speaking of the raunchy, and I don't know if raunchy is like the right word to use, but just some of your stuff is pretty,
Adult-oriented,
yeah. It, as I was flipping through this stuff, it also struck me that it seems like you're getting raunchier and more adult as, you know, as time goes on.
Maybe it's because I don't have kids. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's why. Yeah, more of my friends are getting married and having kids as time goes by, and I'm not, so...
Now, is there any... anything with, like, just kind of feeling that confinement working on the kid stuff that when you're doing the adult stuff, you just kind of let loose even more so than before you were working?
Well, I mean, I just do stuff that I just try to make myself laugh, make friends laugh, so. That's the only criteria, really.
Yeah. Well, you make me laugh a shitload of times, that's for sure. Specifically, one of my all-time favorite Sam Henderson, I guess, concepts are the lame stories.
Uh-huh.
You know, those things, any autobiographical schoolie, these are basically like, you know, just stories about these three guys that, like, live in an apartment and, you know,
yeah.
They kind of like hippie-ish guys and they just get into some kind of crazy predicaments.
Okay.
The first few strips I did more than 10 years ago, I'm going back to that. I guess there is some autobiography to it, called one of the strips hypothetically autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
But I based on things on what I know.
Right, but so, like, you're not really...
Nothing verbatim from...
And you wouldn't really consider one of those characters to be a little bit more like you than...
No.
Now, how about out of all the crazy characters you've created, what one do you think has the most Sam Henderson in him?
I don't know. But, I mean, I try to think of just the work as the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people don't think that way. They think of a particular character as a recurring character, no matter who does it.
Yeah. Well, Schooley, let me just shoot you a list of some of the characters that he has created, and let's get your gut reaction on them. Gunther Bumpus. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I saw one of the strips that had that fella in it.
And what'd you think of it?
I like that, actually.
Yeah, that's based on, there's an urban legend. There was a newspaper clipping somebody sent me of this, somebody named Gunther Burpus, based that was in Germany, stuck in the cat flap, that got stuck in the cat flap. I don't know if that's true or not. And I changed it from Burpus because people think that I made it up.
It was an actual news clipping of a guy. I mean, the concept with the guy is climbing through the cat flap and he gets stuck there. And
yeah, it might be something that just passed by word of mouth.
I kind of got a feeling that happens often in Germany, so it might not.
Maybe, but yeah, and then I sort of like challenged myself to see if I could, because basically the strip is it's easy enough to draw. It's just a guy's ass sticking out of a cat flap with two legs, and each one I do, I keep thinking will be the last, and I keep thinking of more ideas.
So it's basically one of the driving factors that it's easier to draw.
Kind of, but yeah, I always think that I've run out of ideas. I can't do any more, but that seems to be most popular.
Okay, well, how about moving on to He Aims to Please? Schooley, did you check any of those out?
I have not seen that. What's that all about?
It's
kind
about?
Of just like the quintessential art professor.
So, slash pervert, or is that kind of...
Yeah. I came with the idea. Well, a friend of mine actually... was showing her paintings, and one was a nude, and she said that this is that her teacher said this was what he looked like naked, and that's did the first strip based on that.
he said, like, this looks like myself naked.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I just like decided to, so I did that one strip and decided to have that guy be just my the token dirty old man professor character.
Have you ever gotten any feedback from that guy? Like, does he know that it's about him?
No, because it doesn't look... I don't know what the person looks like. Right? It's just based on a quote that I heard.
Yeah, there's plenty of dirty old college professors out there, so it's not like you single
yeah.
them out.
There's probably a million of them like hiding in shame right now. Oh, my God, it's me.
Yeah, I went to art school myself, so I know what it's like.
Yeah, now, you know, and again, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but you got a pretty simplistic style.
Yeah.
So what were you majoring in art school?
Oh, I started out with cartooning, but then I went into illustration cartooning people said my stuff was too stylized, I should be an illustration, and the illustration said my stuff was too simplistic, I should be cartooning. So and neither knows what the other does.
Huh. And so they weren't really too receptive to your cartoons in college there?
Well, I mean, well, School of Visual Arts, I mean, when I went there, it was a more geared towards, like, aspiring Marvel and DC artists, which is fine, but it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right.
Would you say that experience helped you, though, going to art school, or what?
Yeah,
it have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Hmm. Now, you have worked a little bit for the big wigs, though, with that, I only have the first one, I never got the second one, but the Bizarro comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you had two stories in that first collection.
Yeah. I don't read this stuff myself, but I don't have anything against it either. But I just think of superhero comics and comics by a single creator as two different things.
Well, yeah. I mean, definitely, I'm with you on that. But one thing, did you grow up reading superhero comics at all?
Yeah, I read a few.
Because, you know, I was just kind of flipping through this earlier today, and your Captain Marvel story, the one, how do you say his last name? Is it Dean Haspel?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the one he drew, like, that, out of all the stuff in here, that one was, like, the most, kind of, it was almost like a straightforward Golden Age story. Like, it seemed like it could really have happened.
Yeah, well, we were reading C.C. Beck's Captain Marvel stories at the time, and we wanted to do something more like that.
Yeah, I mean,
so, the new Shazam stories are not in that tradition.
The new ones are yet? I have no idea. I mean, I don't know what.
The Shazam I've seen is more like Superman, and it's more serious in nature.
Oh yeah, they're definitely not like the C.C. Beck ones at all. Yeah, you know, no superhero comics are anymore.
Cause, yeah, I basically think that superhero comics are for 10-year-old. Sorry about that. They've forgotten the 10-year-old audience.
Well,
that's true. That's definitely true.
Yeah, there's no arguing that. I mean, but it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Did 10-year-olds stop buying it, or did they start marketing it towards older people? Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was surprised, you know, rereading that. I mean, it really struck me a lot like those old C.C. Beck ones. I mean, Schooly, the basic gist of the story is, you know who Captain Marvel is?
Yeah, I do actually know that.
You know, he gets his powers by saying Shazam, and
right.
He turns into him. Well, who was that, like the Dr. Savannah or something that was in there? Or is that the guy from Miracle Man? I don't know, but anyway, the evil guy, Dr. Savannah was?
Yeah, well, Miracle Man is basically Captain Marvel... getting around the copyright.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I can never remember which one Savannah's from. But he basically...
Savannah's from Captain Marvel.
Okay, and he makes him say, instead of saying Shazam, he says, duh. And it's like,
yeah.
You know, and so he becomes like a big klutz. You know, and of course at the end he figures out how to solve that problem, but...
Well, let me throw a little bit of a spin here into this, because this is sort of bridging two worlds. Superhero comics, at least Marvel, in the last several months, has been taking on that whole political issue of like the Patriot Act, and I guess you'd be against that because it that is obviously aimed probably at an older audience. Like
against the act or against?
You talking about the Civil War thing where the superheroes have to register or something?
Exactly. Well, I'm talking
about the idea.
The idea of that, like having things overtly political like that in a thing that's supposed to be entertainment.
Well, it's kind of alien because originally, Superman used to be for different age, like because there would be things like Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane for different age groups, I guess.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. they have the kids' comics and comics for general audiences at the same time, and goes back to the chicken egg thing. Somehow, like it. Starts aiming towards an older audience. I don't know whether the audience grew up, or the comic books did first.
Right. Well, let's go off on a little bit of a tangent here. Politically, where do you stand politically with that? Would you, do you know the story behind the Civil War in Marvel?
Well, I guess it's a superhero has to register or something.
Yeah.
Like what is?
Where would you stand on that?
I'd be against superheroes registering.
Okay.
Well, Scully, what about yourself? Oh, I'm sorry.
I've mostly voted Democrat but just as the lesser evil.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you on that.
I haven't really voted for Democrats. I voted against Republicans.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you.
I agree.
Yeah. Schooley, what about yourself? First of all, I can't even believe we're discussing Civil War, but what's your take on Civil War? For or against?
Against. What do you mean for or against?
I mean, would you register or would you not
no
register?
No way, man. That was ridiculous.
What?
No, man. Like, I'll tell you what. I'm a little upset that Spider-Man did. Like, he's on the wrong side as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, you got to register like a gun and shit. Some of these people run around with like fucking weapons and crap.
That's true, but I don't know.
You have to register the weapons, probably.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So superheroes that have weapons would do that.
Well, what about like if you're like that Cyclops and you can blow shit up by looking at it? That's a weapon.
His visor should be registered.
Oh, well. Well, let's get back to some more pressing matters here. You know, actually, tying in with this whole serious nature, you know, most of your stuff, Sam, is not on the serious, you know, side of things. Is there, like, a more serious graphic novel in you? Any aspirations to do anything, you know, of a longer nature or more serious?
Maybe. I don't know. Probably be work for hire because I don't really think... other than what I do.
Now, when you say work for hire, do you mean like on corporate-owned characters, or?
Yeah, if I was hired to do somebody else's character and write it seriously, I'd do it. But it's not something I just think of naturally.
But I mean, so like your short stories and whatnot, you never had any aspirations to kind of like lengthen or do like a book-length work of your own?
Well, I've been making them longer because I did a 16 and 24-page story recently.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I just feel that there's more credibility doing longer stories as well.
Yeah,
I don't want people to think that I can only do one or two page stories.
Yeah, it seems like that's like the way things are going. Everybody's kind of working on a longer book length thing. And speaking of length, why the decision to switch Magic Whistle to the much thicker format with the last few issues?
Because I might go back to the other size, I just wanted because it was prohibitively expensive to do color that way, with a thinner format, and I also wanted to get into the book market, but it's been a couple of years and audiences seem to have forgotten what I do, so I'm thinking of switching back. But I also do have a web page, so people won't have to wait a year or two for an issue to come out.
Oh, and what you put like the material? I actually haven't been to your website. What is it, magicwhistle.com?
Yeah, it's 90% up. But yeah, I've been doing strips weekly on that. I was doing something for this thing, serializer.net, but that folded.
Now, when you do the strips for the web, I mean, I'm assuming that this is one of your main sources of income. Like, where's the compensation in that market?
Oh, I haven't. It's only been a few weeks that I've done it. I mean, basically, it's stuff that gets recycled in the Magic Whistle, like the Chugbot story I did a couple issues ago on Magic Whistle. That was originally on the web.
Okay.
It doesn't make any money for me, so I just recycle it in print form.
Okay, I got you. I misunderstood.
But I do have things in weekly installments, so people won't have to wait a few months or a year or two.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that I always enjoyed reading, what you kind of like, you would do these little like mini essays, more or less, on the nature of humor. You know, so what is it? What makes something funny, in your opinion?
I don't know. Because the always funny stuff is just writing down things that I've seen. It started out with just my roommate at the time, Mike, and I were always joking about things that we just found always funny.
Mm-hmm.
And always funny like just seemed to like be a brand name.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and also occasionally you'll kind of pick a specific target, like one of the early ones with Dave Thomas and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And what is it that, like, why do you decide to single out certain individuals?
Well, the Dave Thomas one in particular, I was doing when he was still alive, and there were commercials on, basically, I just kept seeing them all the time. And I was watching, like the Seinfeld strip I did, I was watching Seinfeld a lot, so I did a comic based on that.
Hmm. So basically you're just taking whatever's around you and sticking it in there?
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, who would you say is, looking back in the history of comics, is there any one particular era that you, you know, if you weren't working now in the 21st century, what era you'd like to really, or a scene you'd like to be a part of?
Probably the 50s and 60s. Yeah, I sometimes do feel I was born too late. I remember, like, as a kid, there were, like, all these imitations of Mad that were out that don't exist anymore, and I could easily have gotten work in those.
Yeah. Have you ever been approached by Mad?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Yeah, because it seems like...
I might do something for them in the future.
It seems like you'd fit in there pretty well.
That's what a lot of people say.
Mm-hmm. I saw Cracked Magazine has restarted as well.
Yeah, they approached me as well. But yeah, the Mad has like an anti-crack policy.
Oh, you can't work for both?
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen with either of them.
Yeah, now, but Cracked, is that actually back out? Because I remember hearing a big controversy, like it was supposed to come out. You saw it on the stands?
Yeah, there is an issue out that they're trying to be more of like a comedy magazine than a Mad imitation.
Exactly, yeah.
It's full color, and it's mostly text.
Really?
Yeah, they're trying to be more like Maxim than like Mad.
That's exactly it.
That's what I was going to say.
It's Maxim without the TNA.
What good is that? let's see here. Schooly, any specific things you were wondering?
I was just wondering if, because I know you said you were sort of a fan of specific comics, not necessarily the genre in general, but is there anything you're reading right now that you're really enjoying, comics-wise?
Lately I've just been reading things that people give me, but things I like now, stuff by Johnny Ryan, Ivan Brunet, Steve Weissman.
Yeah, I'm a big Johnny Ryan fan. Steve Weissman, doesn't he do that? What are those two little kids?
He does a few. It's kind of like the Harvey comics, but they're all monsters.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not too familiar. I mean, I know his style, but I don't really read too much of his stuff.
Yeah, I actually like the Johnny Ryan comics that we read, so, which is a big thing for me because I'm not really big on the comic scene, but.
Yeah, that's what he says. I mean, ask him any question about comics, he could probably answer it for you.
That's not true. It's not true.
Yeah. Any other any like prose authors or musicians? Like, what else do you look to for like inspiration or anything outside of the comics medium?
Watch Daily Show regularly. I don't watch much TV.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of the Daily Show myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I usually try and download it. I'm usually not watching it, but I do like to keep up on it. Let me ask you this question. This is something that we've asked everybody we've talked to so far. If you were, if like a publisher basically wanted to put to give you a carte blanche to like bring an old series or a strip or something back into print and just kind of oversee the production of it, you know, kind of like the Peanuts and the Gasoline Alley and all that stuff. Is there any kind of pet project you really would like to bring back to the public or kind of in some kind of archival format?
Yeah, probably one of the Marvel or DC comics, just because I'd have access to all the different characters.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but as far as like doing a specific strip, I can't think of anything in particular. I'd like to being given carte blanche and getting back to Marvel and DC stuff. Since the entire publisher is one universe and all the characters exist in the universe, and I could like do say Spider-Man and wouldn't have to use Spider-Man at all.
Well, actually, that's an interesting answer. I kind of meant like to physically reprint old, like an old strip, Seth is doing. Yeah, but before you answer that, actually, so you're saying you'd kind of like to do your interpretation of Spider-Man?
Or just, as I said, like, just the Marvel or DC, since they each publisher exists, like, all their characters exist in the same universe, just, like, I'd like to do, like, a comic of the whole of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That way I wouldn't have to have a quota or always have the same character in every issue.
Just kind of like a Marvel Universe title.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you know, they seem to be digging deeper and deeper into, like, the whole independent comic scene, or at least there was a phase where they were going through. So you never know.
Yeah, there was a time when, like, Peter Bagg was doing Spider-Man, and he actually did a Hulk comic, which they didn't, the editor he worked with was fired.
Yeah, he was telling us about that, and somebody actually sent me a scan of it, the comic. Uh-huh. I don't know how they got it, but... I don't get it. I mean, I consider Pete Bagg to be one of, like, the greatest, you know. I mean, to turn down something he did, that's ridiculous. But, but how about getting back to the original question? Any, like a vintage strip or anything that you'd like to kind of oversee?
Well, let me see. So, like, things that are being, like, like to see I know there is going to be a complete Dick Tracy. That doesn't really count.
Yeah, they just announced that.
I like things like the Crazy Cat and Peanut strips that are being reprinted now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of what should be reprinted.
Yeah.
That isn't.
They have done a lot of, the well's gonna be dry soon.
No, there's millions of strips.
Yeah,
stuff
that you might like, Slufus, but.
Well, you know.
Yeah, Little Orphan Annie.
Well, come on now. I'm really pushing for a comprehensive Smilin' Jack reprint series. But
yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, do you like that strip?
There's this book, Art Out of Time. I don't know if you've seen it. It basically just has, like, people that were overlooked out of the first time, kind of like the Salieri's of comics.
Oh, yeah, and there's a little piece about the strip in there?
Smilin' Jack's not in there, but Woody Rogers, who was Zach Mosley's assistant, he's in there.
Huh. Yeah, I just have, like, one of those old, I forget who printed them up, but, like, basically a magazine-sized reprint. Schoolie's always busting on me because he looked at it and said it was ridiculous, but I thought that shit was funny as hell. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Sam, we don't want to take up your whole day here, so anything else that you'd like to, you know, we've got about 700,000 listeners. any final
Hopefully one of them will buy stuff.
I think one of them probably will, and I know which one.
Yeah.
What was your
address for your webpage again?
Magicwhistle.com.
Okay, I see. And you're putting weekly strips up, or?
Yeah, it's not in this thing, Webcomics Nation, which magicwhistle.com links to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you click on the word newest strip, it'll take you out, and there's a calendar on that as well.
And what's the next big project to look forward to?
I want to do some silk screens of stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, cool.
That's pretty
Maybe
pleasant.
Shirts, just because the public seems to like just even non-comics people like shirts.
Yeah.
I do want to, like, go beyond the comics audience because that seems kind of finite.
Yeah, I actually have one of your shirts. I got it at the SPX, like, I don't know, seven, 8 years ago. The one with the naked hippie saying, "I'm not naked, you're naked."
Yeah, because I was originally, I made t-shirts, I made extra large only, and those were hard to move because they were only one size. And some people just refused to get extra large.
Well, I don't think you have a problem selling extra large shirts to comics fans.
That's what I thought.
Well, you should have printed extra, extra large.
Yeah, exactly.
You would have sold a ton of them. Okay, Sam, well, listen, thanks so much for taking the call.
Okay.
And, Schooley, any closing remarks?
Nope, I think it's about it.
Okie dokie. Okay. Well, good luck with the Magic Whistle.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, see ya.
All right.